Well, hey, thank you for being here. We are in Hosea chapter 2, looking at verses 1 through 13. Actually, chapter 2, verse 1, and you'll see, is really, I think, and it's pretty obvious, is the conclusion of what's going on in chapter 1. Chapter 1 starts off negative. You know, you are not my people. You are not going to receive mercy. And then, of course, the pronouncement of Jezreel, which is talking about the destruction of a line of kings and the fall of the nation. And then at the end, it ends up talking about being positive. In fact, the word Jezreel, it fits. If you take a look at this, remember the beginning of chapter 1, it says, then the verse 4, then the Lord said to Hosea, call him Jezreel, which refers to the valley where the battles are, the battle of, it means God sows, but this is in reference to the battles, because I will soon punish the house of Jehu for the massacre at Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of Israel. So again, that's double-fold. The end of the kings and the end of Israel. But if you remember, at the end of chapter 1, it says, where is it at? Yeah, it'd be like the Santa Seashore, where I'm looking for the verse right there. Oh, yeah, very last word of chapter 1. The people of Judah and the people of Israel will be reunited, and they will appoint one leader and will come up out of the land. Again, that must refer to some kind of resurrection. Apparently, it's a word of growth, production out of the land. For great will be the day of Jezreel. So, Jezreel starts off negative in the beginning. That's the name of the first son, but ends up positive, talking about the future day when they will come up out of the land, but they will grow. And again, it means God sows. And so, it's kind of obvious here what's going to take place in chapter 2, verse 1. If Jezreel, the first child is mentioned, then you're going to have the one that's not my people, no people, you know, I'll just say not people, and then not mercy. Now, right here, the next part, chapter 2, verse 1, say of your brothers, my people, and your sisters, my loved ones. So right away at the end, just like you had three names in the book, chapter 1, of Jezreel, no mercy, not my people. The chapter ends, Jezreel talking about sowing and production, most likely the resurrection, and then my people and my loved ones, or mercy. And so both of those are reversed. And so as we begin chapter 2, verse 1, you can see how that chapter 2, verse 1 actually is the end of the positive turnaround that was seen in chapter 1. Again, there's a judgment in there, but there is a restoration. And so the first thing I've got written down there on page 1, in the English Standard Version, say to your brothers, you are my people, and to your sisters, you have received mercy. And so I write this point A, the sister, which would be no mercy, is to say to her brothers, Jezreel and not my people, that you are my people. And the brothers, Jezreel and not my people, are to tell their sister or sisters, no mercy, that you have received mercy. So in other words, now you've got the three children talking to each other, if you allow it to be that way. Now remember, throughout this, and this is going to be important in this chapter, throughout the book, you've got Hosea, and whatever Hosea does or says is Yahweh. You've got Gomer, and whatever Gomer does or says is Israel. And here, whenever you see the children of Hosea and Gomer are actually, if you want to say this, we can say citizens or the common person. I'll just say, for our sake, the middle class, who is sucked into the leadership of Israel, and they're going down as a nation. So when you talk about Hosea, you can read this. You can read this chapter twice, the whole book twice. It's Hosea speaking, but then you go back and read it. It's Yahweh speaking and acting. You've got Gomer behaving immorally. But you read it again, it's not Gomer, it's Israel. Now you've got the children, no mercy, not my people, and Jezreel speaking right here. But actually, it's the children, not the children. Now it's the middle class or the citizens that have come back to the Lord now speaking to each other. So when you read this again, say to your brothers, this would be no mercy, saying to her brothers, the older brother and her younger brother, my people. And to your sister, my loved one, the one that's no mercy, your mercy. You know, then you can make it plural, and you've got the middle class speaking to each other, saying those things. Now, that's the positive ending of chapter 1, leading into chapter 2. Now, beginning in chapter 2, verse 2, I'm going to go just through the first 13 verses here. I'll read it in the NIV. And there's some interesting things in here. It's pretty straightforward. We've got to make sure we keep this broken down, Hosea, Gomer, and the children. And we are not real sure about all of the details of their personal life, but it is enough information that when you understand this, that people were watching, listening, and hearing these things. And all of these are for a sign to these people. So there was some, this wasn't just a perfect home, a happy family. They had trouble in their marriage. They had children that were caught between their father and their mother, you know, and they're struggling. And so all this, but the whole thing is taking place in a public display. I mean, a big major Facebook post, and all of Israel's watching it because it's a sign to them. This is exactly who you are before the Lord. So here I'll read the NIV, chapter 2, verse 2. And it's interesting. The children are going to be speaking first here. Rebuke your mother. Again, apparently this would be Hosea speaking to his children, saying in the NIV, rebuke your mother. Rebuke her, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. Let her remove the adulterous look from her face and the unfaithfulness from between her breasts. Otherwise, I will strip her naked and make her as bare as on the day she was born. I will make her like a desert, turn her into a parched land, and slay her with thirst. I will not show my love to her children, because they are the children of adultery. Their mother has been unfaithful and has conceived them in disgrace. She said, now you see Gomer thinking here. She said, I will go after my lovers who give me my food and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. So apparently there's some kind of payment in there. Now, again, if we look at this as a prostitute or just an unfaithful wife, if it's a prostitute, it'd be actual payment. If it's an unfaithful wife, she's providing favors to her lovers, and they're not necessarily paying her as much as they are giving her gifts. And so she's seeing it this way. But nonetheless, we'll come back to that. Therefore, I will block her path with thorn bushes and will wall her in so that she cannot find her way. She will chase after her lovers, but not catch them. She will look for them, but not find them. Then she will say, in this state of desperation, I will go back to my husband as at first. For then I was better off than now. And right there you can see the fantasy life never manifests, and it just turns into heartache and brokenness. And I was better off when I thought I was unhappy. I was better off then. She has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold. And I think you can imagine Hosea providing for his wife, and she's still going astray. But then, of course, you go back and read it again, the Lord providing for Israel, and Israel giving credit to their four gods. Gomer's giving credit to her lovers as being the ones that made her happy and provided for all these gifts, where on the backside, Hosea was really providing her stability. Israel went after the false gods and says, oh, and they got into false religion. This is where all of our crops come from. We worship these gods and good things happen to us. It's like, no, the good things are coming from God. These people or these gods are leading you into false philosophies that will destroy you. Verse 8 again. She has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold, which they used for Baal. Not only gave Baal credit, but used it to worship Baal. Therefore, I will take away my grain when it ripens and my new wine when it is ready. I will take back my wool and my linen intended to cover her nakedness. Again, that would be both Hosea and Yahweh. So now I will expose her lewdness before the eyes of her lovers. No one will take her out of my hands. I will stop all her celebrations, her yearly festivals, her new moons, her Sabbath days, all her appointed feasts. I will ruin her vines and her fig trees, which she said were her pay from her lovers. I will make them a thicket, and wild animals will devour them. I will punish her for the days she burned incense to the Baals. She decked herself with rings and jewelry. Now, that's going to be an important verse when we go back and we begin that first chapter 2, verse 2. She decked herself with rings and jewelry and went after her lovers, but she forgot. image, but me she forgot, declares the Lord. And then we'll pick up in verse 14 where he goes on and says, therefore, I'm now going to allure her, and goes on and talks about some more there. Okay, so that is the verses we're looking at today or tonight. I'm going to look at the notes on page 1. And as you saw right there, what you've got is basically the children are going to plead with their mother, challenge her to come back. If she doesn't come back, the alternative is going to be destruction. And that destruction, as you're going to see, there's going to be interaction here between Gomer's actions. Again, when we say, you know, it's good, I don't want to be redundant here, but we're talking about Gomer, a real person with a real history here. And we're talking about Israel, of which Gomer is a sign for, to try to give them a picture of what they look like. We talked about this on Sunday, about how when we get in our own little realm, everything looks fine here. But when you step out and you see it from God's divine viewpoint, we, like Laodicea, we think we're rich. We have all that we need. But when from God's point, you're pitiful, you're blind, you're poor, you're naked. You don't even have anything. But we think we've got something important because we're consumed in ourselves. Israel thinks they're fine. The ideal here is for them to see Gomer and feel sorry for Gomer, or think she's unstable, to think she's living a wicked life. She's not faithful to her husband. There's something wrong with this woman. Yes, there is. And this woman is living with her husband just like Israel's living with her God. So in other words, it's supposed to be a little time of reflection. It's almost like a moment of just reflection, of thinking, what am I like? Well, you're just like Gomer. And God is hoping Israel will pick up on it. And I got to believe these people's lives, Hosea, Gomer, and the children, had to be a very, it can't be a little thing over in the corner somewhere that no one knew about. To be an effective testimony, to be an effective prophecy, people have to be talking about this. This is like the royal family or something. And they're not royal. But I mean, it's in the tabloid. Everybody's watching this. It's on the news. You would think, because otherwise it becomes meaningless. So Hosea's got a very public life, and Gomer. But going on here with the notes, where it says here on page 1, now we're reading the English Standard Version, where it says in the NIV, it says, rebuke your mother, rebuke her, for she is not my wife. The English Standard uses the phrase, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife. And the first thing we see in point 2 is plead in the English version, or rebuke in the NIV, is the Hebrew word rib, R-I-B. Oh, I know I was going to say something about the things you see in this. I might come back to that. Which basically means to contend, to strive, and refers to contentions and struggles in the public place and society. In other words, it refers to challenging. It's what you may see in a debate. You may see it at we got the presidential caucuses and campaigns going on, and everybody's having public meetings, and they're making a presentation. It means for someone to stand up and challenge the speaker, or to publicly come against something, not too much to come against and rebuke them, but to challenge them on their position in a public way. And so here, Hosea is asking the children, don't rebuke, don't say you're a bad mother. That's not the point. The point is challenge, have contention. It's like, do you realize what you're doing? This doesn't make sense. Try and talk to them, reason. Go to the meeting, ask some questions, try and bring this country back. And that's what this is. The children here are Gomer's children talking to their mother. The children over here we'll just say the citizens or the middle class. So God would be saying here to the middle class, go to your leadership, plead with the nation of Israel. Come back. What are you doing? You're in a position where God is going to reject you because you can't make decisions like this. So here you've got people challenging their nation, not in a derogatory way, but in a please come back. This is not right. And here you've got the children pleading with their mom to come back and rebuild the family, because this is mom. It's not going to work this way. It's not what you think it is. You're following a fantasy. It's not going to work out. You can't have 16 lovers and a family and cheat on dad. It's not going to work out in the end. There's nothing better on the other side. Same thing, the middle class. When the nation starts talking, in Israel's case, about following false gods, and these gods are going to provide for us, because if you worship the Baals, they would have rain, they'd have fertile crops. It even got into child sacrifice. If you offer your children to the gods, they'll give you even more rain. And the leadership began to think this way, and they're pumping this thing down into the middle class. The middle class needs to step up and say, or the citizens say, wait, no. What are you thinking? That's not real. This is not going to turn out like you think. You cannot have a false reality. And, of course, we have it in our culture, and it all depends on what you call false. It's there somewhere. A false concept, and I think we can see it in education, you can see it in the media, you can see it in science, you can see it in the universities. I mean, if you just want to take a shot at it, you know, socialism. If everybody just gives everything in this big pool and everything will work out fine, it's like, that's not, what world do you live in? I mean, you're going to have some reality. But we're being fed in our nation false truths, and the middle class has to stand up and say, enough, it may be happening. I mean, I don't want to get too political, but it's interesting to see what's happening. This false reality could come out of universities. It can come from politicians who are trying to buy people's votes and manipulate people. It can come out of Hollywood. And I'm not sure how you felt about some things. And there's some things circling around where Hollywood is like the leaders in a sense. We gave them that position, and they're now telling us what to do. And it's kind of time, the middle class, you can see it happening. It's like, no, you live at one level, and then you're telling us to live at another level. You know, the example everybody talks about is they're flying around in jets telling us to take public transportation. It's like, okay, we're in two different worlds. And this is what, we're the children talking to our universities, our education, our government, our politicians, or in this case, Hollywood, and athletes who you're to play sports. We're here to watch you play a sport. Don't tell me how to live my middle class life. I'm the one living this life. I'm the one who am searching after God to live a holy life. And now you've got Hollywood telling me. It's like, no, the children need to talk to their mother. And that would be the case right here if Yahweh is talking to, you know, again, the citizens. So that's what we see right here. Hosea is, again, point two yet. Hosea is asking his children to contend with the mother for violating the family and their father. It would be a shaming operation, meaning this is not making sense. It's pointing out this is ridiculous. And I think that's what happens. It's easy to do when someone gets off in reality. It's not so much that you're trying to embarrass them or win the argument, but point out the fallacy. This doesn't make sense. Point three, applied to Israel, this is the common middle-class citizen contending with their national leadership and the national direction with a call to return to the faithfulness to the Lord. Clearly, in Israel's case, to return to the law of Moses, to return to the institutions that God had established through Moses. In our case, it could be simply a matter of just returning to basic reality. I mean, I don't want to say it's a stretch, but it's a stretch to say, to just talk to our secular culture, say you need to return to the Bible. I mean, that's a long jump for them. We just want them to return to reality. You know, nationalism, family, marriage, sexuality, just, you know, work, you know, get a job, provide, you know, rebuild the middle class. That would be enough step if we could go there. Again, not denying the scriptures, but you know, you can still see God working in those things. Okay, the prophets, I put in here too, the prophets did this as well as Hosea. We'll refer again in chapter 4, verse 1, and chapter 12, verse 2. The prophets were sometimes that voice of talking to the nation of Israel or Judah. They are the prophets contending with them, challenging their positions, not always rebuking them, but somehow trying to shock them, slap them, wake them up, make, you know, look at yourself. And this is a case where Hosea, like we said, Hosea and Gomer are the illustrations, the prophet of Israel, to look and say, whoa, that's us. We need to change. But the prophet's ministry was to bring these people back. And when they could come back, it was good. But you're going to see right after this verse, if you don't come back, if you don't listen to the children, then I'm going to have to begin to destroy you. And that's Hosea talking to Gomer and also talking to God, the Lord talking to Israel. Point four, Hosea has disowned his wife in these verses. It is in chapter 3, verse 1, the Lord commands him to take her back. So definitely in these verses right here, you've got Hosea is not only, again, Not only is God rejecting Israel, but Hosea is rejecting Gomer. He's asked the children, please say something to your mother. And when she doesn't respond, he's going to have to reject her. He's going to start pulling back away from her. And because in chapter 3, verse 1, the Lord is going to say, return to her or take her back. So he's going to be cutting her off at some level, you know, the provisions, the protection. She's going to be out on her own. Same thing, Yahweh is going to do the same thing. He's got Israel, and he's going to cut her off, and there's going to be no protection. And that's where we get to talk about the dry land, the parched land. You're going out on your own. And here we go. We're going to get there. Point five, concerning Israel, this verse is a manifestation of the name given to the second son, not my people. And now God's saying, you're not my people, you're not my wife. Point six, the second part of this verse is describing both Gomer's and Israel's behavior. This is interesting. I'm reading right here on page one in the English Standard Version. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife. That's meaning I'm cutting her off. Plead with her because if she stays away, she's going to perish because she will not survive. Her lovers are not going to take care of her like I'm going to take care of her. The false gods are not going to take care of Israel like Yahweh is going to take care of Israel. That she may put away her whoring from her face and her adultery from between her breasts. So let's break this down a little bit. And there's a couple. You've got her face and you've got her breasts. That is the face a look? And is the breast, like, we'll just say sexual? Is it, you know, exposed? Is it luring? And that's one way of going about this. I'm going to say this is not what's being said here, but it's something to think about. And some commentators suggested, and it's right there. She's got the look of an adulteress. Whoring from her face. So whatever that look looks like, a whoring face, you know, it's like stop looking like that. And the breast being used to try to allure, attract sexually her lovers back, or giving them something what they want. That could be what's taking place. I'm going to quickly erase this so it's not on the video camera too long. I think this is what's being said. Because it says put away and from between, it's put away. Now, again, you could put away a look, but, you know, you could write that. And from between, so from between her breast, meaning there's something between her breast, and put away, it's an object or something, you're going to put it away. So I'm going to move away from the idea of luring and a look and some kind of, you know, sexual exposure here to objects. Jewelry. You could even say perfume. You could makeup. Or some kind of eye paint. All these things were used. In fact, Jeremiah chapter 3, 3 is it chapter 3, 3, talks about the look of a harlot on the forehead. Well, what's a harlot's forehead look like? Well, it would have some kind of a band, some kind of decoration, some kind of jewelry, some kind of headpiece that would draw attraction and cause a person to look. So putting away, you could put away jewelry, you could put away perfume, you could put away makeup. Or from between the breasts, the jewelry that is hanging down low around the neck, hanging down between, maybe drawing attention to the breast. But I think this is what it's talking about. Again, does it matter? No, but I think that's what it's saying. That she should put away her whoring from her face and her adultery from between her breasts. Again, this is being applied to both the woman Gomer and the nation of Israel. So it's easy to talk about, you see this right here, easy to talk about seeing Gomer, a woman in this condition. How would this look like with the nation of Israel? The nation of Israel is doing something similar. They've got something that they're using to try to attract. Not only are the false gods going after Israel, what you see, sadly, is Israel is in hot pursuit of the foreign god, the false god. Because of, listen, think when you think of foreign gods, false gods, it's hard for us. It's like, who's going to follow an idol? Think of false philosophies. Think of false ideologies. Think of false truths. Think of things that are being presented in universities, in churches, in some kind of religious establishments, in politics. that are not real. That's not true. That's not the way the world works. And yet, we have people pursuing these fantasies. We don't call them gods, but they are the ideologies of demons. They are the false realities of a spiritual kingdom, the cosmos, in rebellion towards God's world and God's universe. And so Israel would be actively pursuing, and it wouldn't be jewelry or perfume or makeup in the physical sense, but they've got something that they're going after these false gods with and trying to make themselves attractive to these false gods. That's why I write down here point six. The second part of the verse describes both Gomer and Israel's behavior, dress, makeup, and or jewelry, depending on how the words are interpreted. The use of the phrase put away, I put that in there, behavior, jewelry, makeup. Point seven, also coming into the picture of the characters of this chapter will be, and this is what I was going to say earlier, and I stop, that you're going to see here is you not only have Israel and the leadership and the people, the citizens of Israel, you're going to have the land is coming into this. You're going to have plants and vegetation coming into this. And so as Israel goes, there's going to be an effect on the citizens, the leadership, as the nation goes. There's going to be an effect on the citizens. There's going to be an effect on the land. There's going to be an effect on the vegetation, the plants. All these things are going to be affected. So when God punishes Israel, the land is going to be punished. The children or the citizens are going to be punished. The plants, there's going to be the trickle-down punishment. Think about when Jerusalem was destroyed by Babylon or by the Romans. A lot of times you go to the Garden of Gethsemane, and they've got 2,000-year-old olive trees there, which, you know, 1,500, 2,000 years old. That's true. They're very ancient. But they're no older than 2,000 years, because in 70 AD, Rome came in and tore out all the trees for firewood, to stay warm, to cook with, and to build siege weapons and, you know, ramps and things with. All the trees were cut down. So those trees, the Garden of Gethsemane, are not 2,400 years old, because it could be a little small tree or something that survived. But any of the trees would have been cut down. And so when God is judging the land, judging the people, the land also suffers. And that's a principle you see throughout the prophets, is that when a nation is being punished, their environment also suffers. And I will say this, environment. Again, I will say this. We have this whole idea of climate change. We've got to save the planet, save the planet. I am not worried about climate change. I am not worried about the condition of the environment. I'm worried about the condition of the nation. I'm worried about the soul of the nation, because I guarantee you, if climate change is true or if it's not true, with where our nation and how it's behaving, there is an environmental destruction coming. Why? Is it climate change? I don't think so, but I can tell you it's coming, because a nation cannot rebel against God without everything that they're involved in being destroyed. So if you want to save our climate, you want to save our environment, save our national soul, and the environment will follow. If it is plastic bottles, save the soul and we'll fix the plastic problem. But you just spent all your time you've got a corrupt, decaying, rotting soul of a nation, and you're going to save your environment by getting rid of plastic. I mean, you understand how that's stupid. That's when you look, when you talk about looking from the divine viewpoint at a nation. The nation needs to get right with reality. But the nation wants to check out of reality and live in a false reality, whatever that is. And while they're living in this decaying state as a national identity, they're trying to save their environment. It's like a dying horse trying to win a Kentucky Derby or something. You don't even know how to do this. And so, again, that's my advice on climate change, is let's stop worrying about the climate and start worrying about the soul of the nation, and the climate will follow. Now, again, that's climate change. I was reading, I'm doing my genealogy. This is way off subject. I was working on my genealogy. And I went through and I tried to put a little chart by all these generations. I tried to put a little timeline on my little web page I put together of what was happening in the world at that time. And one of the things that was happening at some point, is it 900, is it 1100 AD? What was taking place was there was mass migration because there was global cooling. It was, you know about this from history class. We studied this in school. It was in Europe, there was a mini ice age came through. And they, what the crops they used to be able to grow, they couldn't grow, and people had to start migrating and moving. It's recorded. There, you can see it in a variety of levels. There was a climate movement, and it affected, Iceland, Greenland. I mean, it's reversed. You right? Is this true? What is this true? I'm way out of my league now. Iceland, Greenland. Which one of these is green? Do you know? Iceland. And which one is covered with ice? Greenland. Now, did they do that because they're trying to be comical? Hey, this is green. Let's call it Iceland and confuse everybody. They'll never come here. No, it was called Iceland because at one time it was ice. And Greenland was very fertile, and it turned into ice. It's like, when? Well, it was during the Middle Ages. During the time. It had nothing to do with the Republicans. It had nothing to do with the Conservatives. It had nothing to do with the Industrial Age. That all happened. Anyway, amen. All right, so here we go. But anyway, point seven, also coming into the picture are of the characteristics of this chapter will be the physical land of Israel portrayed by animals and plants. The spiritual dimension of the heavens are responding. So not only is there going to be a physical reaction to Israel's judgment, there's going to be a cosmic, in the sense of the spiritual dimension, is going to be involved in this. So it's full scale. It's multidimensional as we see this. And that is, again, why we've got the scriptures to see what's going on. Okay, now, if chapter 2, verse 2, if the wife doesn't respond to the children, if she doesn't remove this jewelry and makeup and eye paint of trying to attract her lovers and return to her God or return to her husband, here's what's going to take place. Chapter 2, verse 3, NIV says, otherwise, English Standard Version says, lest I strip her naked and make her as in the day she was born and make her like a wilderness and make her like a parched land and kill her with thirst. So what you have here, some, and again, this is worth thinking about in some cultures, and in Israel's culture, it's hard to point this out, but sometimes the punishment for an adulterous wife was to have her stripped naked and displayed publicly. In other words, if you want to be like that, here, everyone take a look. And again, that's some commentaries dance around that idea, but they end up saying there's not enough evidence for that. Again, it's an interesting concept. It'd make a great sermon. Very dramatic. You can have a lot of emotion, but I don't think that's what we're talking about here. This right here involves naked. And this is not, I don't think, naked in the sexual sense. It's naked as in the abandoned sense. Strip her naked and make her as in the day she was born. And so meaning nothing. Again, so this is nothing. The word naked is in there, but it has nothing to do with sexuality, I don't think. Because watch. You're naked, just like the day you were born. How you came is how you're going to go. And make her like a wilderness. Now, wilderness is meaning abandoned. There's nothing there. And in the wilderness, it's going to be a parched land, meaning there's no longer any water. There's no longer any provisions. And what's going to result in? Kill her with thirst. I spelled thirst right. Yes, I did. Okay. So you understand that makes more sense. You can get hung up on the word naked here and talk about, oh, being publicly exposed and nakedness and all that. But then where do you go with all this? Naked, meaning you have nothing, meaning you're abandoned in the wilderness in a parched land where there's no water, where you're going to die of being abandoned naked in this wilderness. In other words, this is basically destruction. Hosea is doing that to Gomer. He is clearly in chapter 3, verse 1. It says, the Lord said to me, Go show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another and is an adulterous lover, as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. That would be one of the little rituals they'd have in their cults. In other words, here in this chapter, he is abandoning her. She is going to be, and again, Yahweh the same thing. He's going to abandon Israel. They'll have nothing. They're going to die in this parched land. Gomer is being set up for everything. She's being left out. You're going to have to now survive. Now she doesn't think this is a problem. She does not think this is a problem because she's got on the wings over here. She's got her lovers. And Israel, Hosea can speak, Jeremiah can speak, Isaiah can speak, but we know we can speak to our culture. You are abandoning God. Not a problem. I mean, how much of an influence has God had in our culture anyhow? I mean, we've got a military. We're going to all group together. This is dangerous. Here you start talking like Babel. We'll all come together. What we need is we need unity. We need to just come together, solve our problems, realize we all are connected. Now, have you said anything about God? No. We're not even concerned about God because we have a plan. If we will unify, if we will work together, if we'll treat others right, they'll treat us right. We're going to get rid of the weapons. We're going to get rid of the borders. We're going to get rid of the minimum wage. We're going to get rid of personal responsibility. You can choose whatever sex you want. There's no limits. Everyone is now free. That's great. That sounds perfect. Just like Gomer is not threatened when she hears naked, nothing, wilderness, parched land, kill you with thirst. You don't know how many lovers I've got, and you don't know how much they love me and how many provisions they've got. We'll do the same thing. We're going to unify. You're abandoning God. We're all right. We're going to unify. We're going to work together. We're going to solve our environmental problems. We're going to solve a world war and bring world peace. Now, what you're going to see right here, and she's going to say these things, not a problem. God threatens Israel. They're not impressed. Hosea threatens Gomer. She's not intimidated. She's got lovers. Israel's got false gods. We need to return to God. We're not going to because we are going to unify. We're going to follow the Hollywood stars into a utopia. Yes, we are. Okay, her lovers are worthless. Israel's gods are worthless. Our Hollywood stars and athletes are worthless. So that's where this is heading. So here it is. Chapter 2, verse 3, lest I strip her naked and make her as on the day she was born and make her like a wilderness and make her like a parched land and kill her with thirst. Upon her children, this is chapter 2, verse 4, upon her children also I will have no mercy because they are the children of whoredom. In other words, her children are going to be just like her. If it's going to be Gomer's children, they're going to take up her style. They're going to follow the leadership, the nation of Israel. The citizens, the middle class, is going to follow. So the middle class, who's supposed to be calling out for revival, calling out to change, if they don't make an impact, they're going to be destroyed. If these children don't make an impact on Gomer, they're going to be destroyed. They're being torn between a father and a mother who are breaking apart. The children are going to be destroyed in this marriage. Israel, the nation, the middle class, is going to be destroyed. So it says right there, upon her children also I will have no mercy because they are the children of whoredom. We are the middle class of a nation in rebellion towards God. God, look, when God came and judged Israel, judged Judah, destroyed Jerusalem, he didn't pick out a few and say, I'm just going to destroy you. It was like the whole nation's going. Now, again, you have the second captivity of Ezekiel's day where the good figs were taken before the judgment came. That's in Jeremiah. So you've got that taking place. But everyone suffered. I mean, everyone ran out of it. That's why the Christians left Jerusalem before the destruction came because they knew they wouldn't be spared. Well, we're Christians, we're following Christ, we'll just stand here and watch. No, you won't. You're going to go down with the same. Jeremiah was tempted to leave Jerusalem. He saw what was coming. And God told him, you're a prophet here. You stay here. I will protect you. Now, Jeremiah was given special protection because you're called to be here. But you tell everybody else, your only way you're going to survive is if you go surrender to Nebuchadnezzar. And he told them that, and they called him a traitor. Now, he was giving people that advice, you leave, because God's not going to spare anybody. But Jeremiah was told, if you run and don't stay here and preach, I will find you and kill you. Then he gives an example of a prophet that fled to Egypt and was hunted down and killed. But nonetheless, that's what this is saying. When this happens to Gomer, the children suffer. When this happens to Israel, the nation suffers. Chapter 2, verse 5. For their mother has played the whore. She who conceived them has acted shamefully. For she said... Now, there's two places Gomer speaks. It's here and chapter 2, verse 7. And that's what I'm saying. This is what Hosea is saying. This is what Yahweh is saying to Israel or to Gomer. But this is what Gomer's thinking. This is what Israel's thinking. First, she said, probably to herself, thinking in her head, this is her thoughts, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Ha! This isn't going to hurt me. You're going to leave me naked in the wilderness in a parched land, kill me of thirst? I don't think so, because I will just go to my lovers who give me bread and water and wool and flax and oil and my drink. Now understand, in Israel's case, the false gods were not giving them any of that. That all comes from the Creator. These lovers were not providing for her stability and provisions like her husband. They are just manipulating her. And when they're done with her, they're going to cut her off. And she will be here alone. She does not realize that. She's got a false hope in a fake lover, just like Israel's got a fake hope in a false reality. It's never going to manifest. But she says, and notice right here, the things that are, I'll read this again. It says, this may be an expression of Gomer's thinking. The lovers are mentioned in four times in chapter 2, 7, 10, 12, and chapter 2, verse 13. The lovers are the Canaanite deities, which are called, in the Hebrew, they're called Balaam or Baals. In other words, she's pursuing men, lovers. Israel's pursuing the Baals. And the Baals were the gods, the false gods, the fertility gods, the gods that brought rain, the god that produced crops and children and blessings, and they're pursuing Baals. The Baals have no control. Elijah is going to prove that. Because the Baals created, I mean, that's the whole story. On Mount Carmel, the whole story was there's been a drought. Who brought the drought? This god. 3 years, no rain. Then Elijah goes on Mount Carmel, where there was water. There's always water on Mount Carmel. And then said, you know, the people were there. There's still apparently green on the mountain there. Call on your God to bring down, you know, lightning. And they couldn't. They could get no result, not even lightning, and no rain. Well, when Elijah prayed, they prayed all day, cut themselves. It says they were exhausted calling. It's comical. It is a funny, comical set of verses. Because they're dancing, they're singing, they're praising Baal, they're calling for fire. And everybody knows. Everybody knows it's real. Everybody knows climate change is real. We've been talking about it for years. And they know we're just going to call fire out of heaven. Just step back and watch us. We've preached this for years. Oh, Baal. And they shouted. They danced. It says they cut themselves trying to motivate him. Look, we're bleeding for you. And nothing happened. In other words, the Baals, who are in control of all of these things, couldn't do anything. Elijah steps up and says, well, let's make this more of a challenge. Cover my altar with water. Put more water. Just cover it. Make it impossible. Because you know our God can't do anything. And he says, and he just pray. He prays. No dancing, no singing, no shouting. He just calls on the covenant God, says, show him. Leaves a hole in the ground. It's kind of like, well. And then it starts raining. And it's like, there was no doubt. It wasn't the Baals were powerless. They were impotent. But yet the people had complete faith in him. These people have complete faith in the Baals. And they think, like Gomer thinks her lovers are going to provide all these things. Israel is not intimidated by Hosea or Joel or Amos or Habakkuk. Or, you know, not Habakkuk, he's not this time. But none of the prophets. Because we've still got the Baals. You've got Yahweh, we've got the Baals. And they're being preached so much, their universities, their religion, their culture, their king, preaching the Baals. They had complete confidence. So just like Gomer's got complete confidence in her lovers. Point five, under chapter 2, verse 5, Gomer Israel attributes their provisions and blessings to these foreign fake gods. And the provisions are listed these times right here. You can see these provisions are repeated over several times. The provisions of bread, water, wool, flax, oil, or drink in chapter 2, verse 5. Chapter 2, verse 8, grain, wine, oil, silver, gold. Chapter 2, verse 9, grain, wine, wool, flax. Chapter 2, verse 12, vines, fig trees. Chapter 2, verse 22, grain, wine, oil. These are the provisions they're talking about. These provisions come from God, and Hosea's making a point of it. Or, for Gomer's sake, these provisions are guaranteed to her by her husband, Hosea. Chapter 2, verse 6, therefore, chapter 2, verse 6, it says, therefore, I will hedge up her way with thorns. In other words, her route of escape or her route of going after these gods or going after these lovers is going to be very difficult. And I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. She shall pursue her lovers, but not overtake them. She shall seek them, but shall not find them. In other words, God is saying, or Gomer is saying, I will make sure these lovers never find her attractive again. They're not going to be there. When she looks for them, she'll never find these lovers. I'm going to build a hedge. I'm going to put up thorns. I'm going to make a public demonstration, and they will abandon her, and there's going to be no lovers for Gomer when she goes there. I'm going to do this to her, cut her off, and I'm going to cut off what she thinks she's going for. Now, in the same way, Israel is going to be cut off by God, but they're going to go to their gods, their false realities, their Baals, or our culture is going to go to their false realities. And God's saying right here, watch this, this is great. They've got an idea. In their mind, Gomer and Israel have in their mind, United States has in their mind, what perfection it would be. If I could just get to the right place, if I could just be with the right people, if we could just get the right philosophy, if we could just get the right philosophy of political party and position, it will be beautiful. Now you're talking John Lennon, Yoko type thinking. If we could just do this, it's like, again, I always want to point out the Beatles and all the love and all the dopey things they did. They're a classic case. I was a Beatles fan. Still am a Beatles fan. But they're a classic case of someone with talent, the ability to write catchy songs, and just crank out, hit after, what do people want to hear? Just crank out the sound they want to hear. They were great artists. They were creative. They did a lot of fun things. But when they became popular, when they became rich, all of a sudden now, we're going to tell you how to live. Because we can write fun songs, I'm going to tell you how to live. And they started preaching. They started preaching stupidity. And they started preaching peace and love. What is this? Where is this coming? Utopia. And again, it's captured in John Lennon's song, Imagine. What a stupid song. But again, the point there, the Beatles, the Love Crew, couldn't even get along. The Rolling Stones are still going. Aerosmith is celebrating 40 years. The Beatles, half of them are dead. They came in the 60s, and they are done by 69. I mean, they didn't even make it out of the 60s. There's no Beatles in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. Forget the 21st century. The Stones are there. I'm not preaching rock and roll, but the Rolling Stones were there in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. My son just saw them in Germany last summer. He saw Mick Jagger. Him and his wife saw Mick Jagger and the Stones, Keith Richards, still on the stage. I mean, they're like 70 years old. They're still going. Okay, the point. The Beatles were preaching a false reality. They could write songs, and they're preaching love. But it's like there's nothing there. It's emptiness. And so just like they're turning to these gods, there's no substance. They're going to be disappointed. Here it is, right here. I'm bottom of page 2. Therefore, I will hedge her up her way. You aren't going to be able to find her way so that she cannot find her paths. That can refer to the Assyrian invasion. And in chapter 2, verse 7, she shall pursue her lovers, Gomer and Israel will pursue her false gods, but not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. In other words, when she is in this situation, parched land, ready to die of thirst, all of a sudden, I can't catch up to the false gods. That's because there's nothing there. I can't catch up to these lovers. That's because there's nothing really there, just manipulation. And we as a culture are chasing this fantasy, thinking we can avoid God's judgment because we're going to go here. And when we get there, There's going to be nothing there. The reason I mentioned the Beatles was they talked about it. They were there themselves, and they broke up. They couldn't even get along. So, there. The Beatles proved the point. Then she will say, I'll return to here's how desperate she's going to be. I will go and return to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. Now, hopefully our culture is right now looking at Hollywood, realizing how empty it is. They're preaching morality to us after 50 years of pumping trash at us. You're looking at athletes who, because you can do something athletically, you now have a political opinion that we should consider. It's empty. There's nothing here. You can't hold it together. We're looking at John, Paul, George, and Ringo. It's like, where'd you go? There's nothing here. They're going to return back to her husband. Israel will return back to her God. That's the purpose. Gomer, in this case, is going to turn back to her husband. Okay, that's what it says right here. I'll go to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. Chapter 2, verse 8. And she did not know. And this is exactly what we've been saying. And she did not know. Gomer and Israel did not know it was I, either Hosea or Yahweh, who gave her the grain, the wine, the oil, and who lavished on her the silver and gold, which they used for Baal. All these provisions were coming from Yahweh, and she was giving credit to her happiness. Her stability in life was her lovers, or Israel's stability and all their provisions was the Baals, the false gods. And God was saying, I was the one who gave them the wine, the oil, the grain, the harvest, the trees, all their crops was coming from Yahweh. I gave them to them, but they misunderstood and they took and used them to worship the Baal. Or she gave credit to her lovers for what Hosea was giving her. This is going to be mentioned a couple more times. Okay, going on. Therefore, I will take back my grain in its time, and my wine is in its season. When the grain time comes, there's going to be no harvest. When a wine time comes, the season's over. I will take away my wool and my flax, which were to cover her nakedness. That's how he's going to do this, leaving her naked. See, covering her nakedness. All these things that she was using to protect herself, I'm taking those away from her. She's going to be naked, and she's going to end up dying. And these Baals can't help. The lovers can't help. It's just repeating itself, or I'm just building on what I was saying. Chapter 2, verse 10. Now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her out of my hand. So she's standing right here with no provisions. No lovers are coming to her rescue. Hosea has said, none, enough is enough. Yahweh said, enough is enough. The Baals are powerless. She's caught right here in the middle, and everyone's looking at her. It's like, well, where's your provisions? God is saying, I'm not doing them anymore. Get them from the Baals. The Baals can't do anything. Hosea is saying, get them from your lovers. The lovers aren't there anymore. And now she realizes, Gomer realizes, I need to go back to Hosea and say I was wrong. Okay, right? Gomer's going to go back to Hosea and say, I was wrong. Israel, what do you think you're going to do? You're going to go back to Yahweh and say, I was wrong, and we can rebuild this. But Israel's not going to. Chapter 2, verse 10, now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her out of my hand. And I will put an end to all her mirth, her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all of her appointed feasts. All these things that were originally intended to honor Yahweh, being used to honor the Baals, God's going to stop that. Just like he's going to destroy the tabernacle, going to destroy the temple. Just destroy these things. You're going to misuse them? I'll just destroy them. And I will lay waste her vines and her fig trees, of which she said. Again, the vines and the fig trees. That's, again, the cutting down of the trees, the burning of the vineyards. Which she says, these are my wages, which my lovers have given me. This is what I get from my lovers, Gomer would say. Or Israel says, this is what the Baals have given me. God says, okay, the Baals gave them to you, watch. I just burn them all down. Now what are you going to do? I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the fields shall devour them. In other words, overgrowth. There's going to be nothing left in the land. It's going to be overgrown. And I will punish her for the feast days of the Baals, when she burned offerings to them. Now here it is. And adorned herself with her ring and jewelry. That's where we go back to take off the look of the harlot. That's, I think, the rings and the jewelry. and went after her lover. She decorates herself up so everyone's attracted. They notice her. The lovers or the Baals would notice her in their worship services. They're doing certain rituals and wearing certain clothes and decorations and omelets, to get the attention of the Baals, just like a prostitute. Adorned herself with her ring and jewelry and went after her lovers and forgot me, declares the Lord. Again, I just say the jewelry is mentioned again. So that is what those verses are saying. And as we continue then next week into chapter 2, verse 14, you've got another set of verses 14 to the end of the chapter of where the Lord is going to continue to, you know, build on this until we get to chapter 3, verse 1, where the Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife. And again, after all this is done right here, she's going to be here in the middle. Just Israel is going to be here in the middle. Gomer is going to be here. And Israel's going to be here. There is no one in the wings to help them. They are destitute. They are naked. They're alone. And God is tells Hosea, do what I'm going to do. Hosea, you cut her off. Again, we don't know enough to say he divorced her. We don't know enough if he's divorced her. I think it's pretty clear he cut her off. It's like we're done here. And so she is out on her own, struggling, realizing I need to go back to Hosea. Israel's supposed to be doing the same thing. But in chapter 3, verse 1, God's going to say, go show your love to your wife again. Hosea, that doesn't mean go sleep with her and have sex and have another child. That means go show her your love. Start providing. Bring her back home and bring her back in. Again, we don't know if her nature's changed, but Hosea's supposed to reunite because what is God going to do with Israel? After they realize all this, their only hope is, again, God coming and rescuing. So that's where this is going. Any questions, comments, thoughts, insights, corrections? Is that 2 Kings? It's either at the end of 1 Kings or 2 Kings. Elijah goes up to heaven right at the beginning of the 2 Kings, doesn't he? So it must be 1 Kings. I'm going to say 17. Solomon's Wives, 12. I'm saying 17 right now. I'm getting there 16. There's Elijah fed by ravens. Elijah comes in the picture in chapter 17. Elijah and Obadiah, chapter 18 of 1 Kings. Elijah flees to Horeb, one of the sad stories of Elijah's life, chapter 19. So it's chapter 18, the fire on Mount Carmel, chapter 18, verse 16. And that time the culture is really, really, really tough. Really in hard shape. Okay, any other thoughts? I will pray, and you're free to go. Father, again, thank you for your truth. We thank you for your word. We ask that we, again, would judge ourselves, that we would be the people that are calling others back to repentance, calling them towards Jesus Christ, but also we'd examine our hearts, that we would not be like Gomer or Israel and giving credit where credit is not due, but giving you credit for all that we have and continuing to pursue you and for your faithfulness to us and your genuine love that's given to us in grace. Again, Father, we thank you for this, and ask that we may understand it and grow in it. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for your patience.